Hey everyone, welcome back to the Alinea Coaches Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. William Mills. I'm a physical therapist. And today I chatted with Madison Klein-Hines. She is an awesome person. I probably just messed up her last name because it's been a minute since we recorded this. But the big topic highlights were dealing with barbell athletes, both strength, conditioning, and working around certain issues, as well as forming relationships with musculoskeletal clinicians. Shout out to PTs, you know, in different places to have the best options for your clients, as well as staying in your lane as a coach versus a healthcare clinician. It's a fun lane. It's an easy lane. There's cross streams, but depending on your credentials, it's important to stay in your lane. And that's fine. We encourage that. We encourage staying in your lane and we encourage collaboration. That's why we're doing this podcast. So I hope you enjoy. Hope you have a good listen and we'll catch you in the next episode. Peace.
If you're a barbell coach or trainer interested in learning more about the mechanics of lifting, or struggles with programming a client through pain to peak performance, or communication skills to effectively gather intel on your client's previous injuries, this podcast is for you. The Alinea Coaches Podcast exists to elevate strength and conditioning coaches, as well as personal trainers to the highest degree. Co-hosts and barbell coaches turned doctors of physical therapy, William Mills and Joey Rosie, interview coaches and trainers from around the globe on improving mechanics, communication, and programming to better serve their clients as a new line of fitness professional.
All right, guys, welcome back. We are going to be chatting with Madison Klein-Hines from, I'm gonna mess this up, Louisville, Kentucky. She's a strength coach. We're going to be chatting today about networking stuff, dealing with athletes and clientele that have a lot of pre-existing medical conditions, as well as optimizing different things for athletes. So what's up? We got our coffee.
We did. I'm so excited to be here this morning, even though it's like quarantine status. So we're Zoom calling like champs.
Yeah. It is smack dab in the middle of plague. So Louisiana has been locked down since, well, the gyms and everything else, like the gyms and restaurants closed a week before everything else did. So I've been feeling the quarantine effects since March 16th. What about you?
That's pretty similar to us, actually. I think we started locking down certain businesses and things a little bit before then. But I know the gyms and restaurants and everything was for sure put in place that same week, like March 16th to 18th, somewhere in there. Schools were out long before then, though. So it was crazy here for a bit.
Yeah.
So
my birthday is on March 17th. And it was the first, so it's weird because my parents came into town and we were able to go to dinner over the weekend before, mm-hmm. whenever they were still open. But it was the first time that I've not like gone out to eat for a birthday dinner. And it was the first time that I ate in. So like we still got steaks, but it was a steak dinner at home, not at a steakhouse. It was weird. I've been seeing a lot of people posting about their birthdays and quarantine birthdays and how it's not that fun. A lot of people that I follow, actually. So we're all Pisces, if that means anything to you. But I guess we're handling it well overall. But I was on the front end of that shit. I was like patient zero with quarantine birthday.
Quarantine
like day
birthday.
Two. Yeah.
My birthday is not till the end of July. And I had someone the other day who was like, oh, well, you might still be in quarantine on your birthday. And I was like, please don't say that. Like, that might really genuinely suck. So, but you know, it is what it is. And yeah. I think a lot of people are making the best out of it, especially healthcare, like amazing that they're doing everything that they're able to do. Mm-hmm. But then like even gyms, so many gyms here in Louisville are, and personal trainers and things, you know, you see the Zoom calls. I don't love all the home workouts. There are a few that I'm like, okay. And I'm totally guilty of posting some, but yeah, there's only so many home workouts that you can do before you're like, now I just want to sit.
Right. Yeah, I agree. My buddy Trent, who owns one of the gyms that I have a clinic in, he was like, dude, you need to run an ad on front of the shoulder pain for all these shitty push-ups we're seeing on Instagram. Cause there's going to be some content out there for you whenever this all blows over. Not that all of the push-ups are bad, but like it was right whenever things started where everybody was tagging people in the 10 push-up thing. I got tagged like 4 times in a day and I was like, this is bullshit.
I didn't do any of them.
How many did you get tagged in?
I think somewhere like 4 or 5. I got tagged in one that was strict handstand push-ups and I was like, no, I'm good.
Very CrossFitty.
Very CrossFitty. I was like, tag me in a snatch video and maybe. We'll see.
Do you have a barbell at home?
I do. I have a power rack and a barbell, so.
Nice.
Kind of came with the territory. I've had that. I found that on Craigslist like 6 years ago. This guy was like, my wife is pregnant. She said I have to get rid of all the equipment in our house.
What?
Yeah. So he was like, if you can come pick it up, it's free. And I was like, I'll be there in an hour.
Holy shit. That's awesome. Got a ton of bar.
Well, I bought a women's bar separately. So it was, his was like just a cat barbell, but the power rack was super nice. So kept it.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. There's a guy who.
That is a Craigslist treasure.
It was, and especially now, because everyone's like, I don't know how to find anything.
Dude, they're sold out everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You can't find anything.
Can't.
I got people texting me, a marketing guy that I know. He's like, hey, do you know anybody selling 25-pound dumbbells? I'm like, no. All the gyms loaned them out. All the mm-hmm. Globo gyms probably are just hoarding them.
Right.
But yeah, that's funny. What a find. Mm-hmm. So right before we started, you were bringing up something that you've noticed in athletes or people that you train.
Yeah. Let's jump into that. A lot of that is typically what I notice with athletes is scope of practice. So I think
athletes or trainers.
With my athletes, I don't think that they understand where the lines are.
Okay.
Really, you know, and I think that part of that can be educationally upfront. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's become a lot more individual trainer's responsibility to draw that line and be very clear about it because a lot of gyms won't do it. Specifically, a lot of CrossFit gyms won't do it. And they
you
won't
do work out in a CrossFit gym.
I do. Yeah. I work out in a CrossFit gym, but you know, there's a lot of, like, we have the FMS assessment. And sure. So when it comes to one-on-one training, it's definitely feasible to do that, to make sure that they have a standardized assessment. They also might have a more subjective one, mm-hmm. Depending on, like we talked about, I work with certain clients that are a little bit off the normal path.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah, but with what I've noticed is a lot of athletes are like, hey, you know, I did this and I heard this pop. Like, what is it? And I'm like, I am not your doctor.
Yeah. What do you think I could say to that?
Yeah. And they're like, yeah, but you know what I do when I do this movement. I'm like, I do know that, but that doesn't mean that I can diagnose you.
Sure.
And then there's this kind of back and forth where they don't want to, like, it's like pulling teeth to suggest that they go see a physical therapist. And a lot of times I've noticed, especially with like knee, shoulder, they're like, I'm just going to go get an injection. Yeah. That's how my heart.
That's the Joe Exotic.
Yeah. And you know, it's
sniff.
it's so rough. And so it's actually been, it was really interesting. So 2017, I went to the CrossFit Games as a coach with a master's athlete, and she was 60 at the time. I don't know if you watch CrossFit Games, because yeah. I know you do CrossFit.
Okay. I've been like four or five times.
The year that it was nasty, rainy out. It was the first year.
I was there.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to cry on day one because mm-hmm. I didn't bring anything warm.
It was cold. Oh,
I froze my little tee-taws off.
Well, so you remember the sketchiness that was the log at where they had to like cross on the rope on the log?
Yes.
Yeah. No. Okay. Well, they gave them a warm-up run the day before. All the athletes got a warm-up run. And I have this video, and I see my athlete, and she's doing her warm-up practice, and she gets to the next step. And I see her hesitate, like she's like, oh, I should do one more practice rep. And I was like, don't do it. Like, but I'm in the stands. I'm not allowed to be on the field with her. And she goes to her practice rep, and straight up scorpions off the end of the log, which is 3 feet in the air. But scorpions, like, straight onto her, you know, like right at her GH joint is just like smacked into the ground. And I see her get up and just like do this. And I was like, oh no. So she grabs her shoulder. My heart sinks because I already know she's a tough athlete. She's got it into the games at 60 years old. She's mm-hmm. not, you know, and we get off and she's like, my shoulder is not okay. It's not good. And I was like, well, what do you want to do? You know, she's like, I don't want to get it looked at right now yet. And I was like, okay.
It was, she didn't dislocate it, right? It wasn't hanging out.
No.
Okay.
No, it wasn't hanging out.
Let's say you need to put that back in.
But I was like, okay, well, can you do, you know, like a normal arc for me? And she's like, no. And I was like, you do realize that the run, swim, run event is first. She's like, yeah, okay. So that's where it's kind of that line of you're an autonomous person. Like, you are making your own decisions here. I'm just giving you the options. She finished the run, swim, run, and we got back to her cooling down. And as soon as she started cooling down, she's like, range of motion, just less than 45 degrees. So I was like, all right, something is really bad here as far as her just shoulder movement. And fortunately, they have PTs on site. They have, you know, orthos on site too. And so she went and got it looked at, had a fractured humerus. And they were like, oh yeah, you were able to swim just because of the buoyancy, but she got pulled. And I go through all of this because she actually has been someone I can turn to in the gym to say, hey, you know, regularly I send people her way, in the sense of, I have a lot of athletes who don't want to go see a PT. They want to go to the chiropractor. They want to get an injection. And I'm like, what did Dolores do when she was a games athlete and she had an injury? They're like, she went to PT. I'm like, do you know why? I'm like, no, why? Because that's who is the specialist in musculoskeletal injuries.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I'm like, she didn't go to the chiropractor when her joint or her humerus was hurt, because you can't get an adjustment to fix a fracture. Like, it just doesn't work like that. You can't get an injection, but you can make it worse. And I've actually had a lot of, just using that kind of personal story and stuff, it helps with a lot of athletes being a lot more receptive to trying going. Yeah. And we do have some like direct access in Kentucky, obviously.
Yeah, we do.
So that's been super beneficial. But, you know, there are still people who prefer to use insurance. And so it's just kind of finding the right groups, the people who are evidence-based, things like that as we go. But yeah.
Cool. I like that her name's Dolores. That's very Westworld of her.
Yes, that throws me off too, because they're not similar. No.
That's all I could picture.
Yeah, no. She's actually now the voice on the radio for the PT clinic that she used.
Really?
Yeah, she is all about them.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. So
she's their
spokeswoman now.
Mm-hmm. Spokeswoman. That's cool. Yeah, that's really cool that you could use that as an example. I would say there's a lot of talks with the coaches. I work very closely with the coaches that I train or I treat out of. I treat out of four different gyms in the Baton Rouge area.
Mm-hmm.
And I work pretty closely with all of the coaches. And in one of the gyms, there's been a running theme where, you know, the first thing that most people do is go see their primary care physician. I'll just walk through the normal track of how someone doesn't get better, right? So if something hurts, they go see their primary care physician. The primary care physician doesn't do an assessment, right? Just maybe palpates, no movement assessment, no really thorough history. But the low-hanging fruit in that is if there's not any kind of heat and swelling, well, they probably don't have an infection, so they just tell them to take 2 weeks off. And the athlete assumes that they can't go to the gym because they have to take 2 weeks off. Well, it's not that. It's just don't do the thing that hurts, right? But there's even more to that. Like, if it hurts after I ran a 5K, well, what does it feel like if you ran a 400-meter run for repeats with a 2-minute rest in between? Could you do that for a few sets? Then you could probably run if it doesn't piss it off more, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they don't it's kind of like an absolute, and I'm a Star Wars nerd, and I say only Siths speak in absolutes. But they don't understand that because they think, you know, it's a medical professional telling them not to do anything. So they go, they hurt themselves, the tissues are affected, they take 2 weeks off, and then they come back to the gym 2 weeks later after not doing anything. And they're like, yeah, it still hurts. I'm just not going to do X, Y, and Z. So then they just start back at what they could have started with 2 weeks prior. And I made the observation whenever this first started, I did like a little Facebook Live for one of the gyms about, you know, the idea that taking 2 weeks off. At first, whenever this all started, it was going to be 3 weeks, right? So it was going to stop. And then everything is going to open back up April 13th. It's probably going to be longer than that now.
Yeah.
But I made the comparison of, you know, a lot of you that have hurt yourselves in the past have been told take 2 weeks off. And whenever you feel like you can't go to the gym, it really affects you because those are your people. Like, that's what you look forward to during the day. That could be your safe space. That could be your stress relieving place. Like, it's your go-to place. So whenever you feel like you can't go there for 2 weeks, you just like sit at home and twiddle your thumbs. It's very similar to what the quarantine is like right now, except nobody can do that, so everybody's feeling it. But circling back to that idea that taking rest, like, yeah, I use the analogy that yes, your tissues are going to heal,
mm-hmm.
but they were at a certain level of performance before you tweaked whatever you tweaked. I almost said twoke.
Be twoken.
And, you know, the body's going to heal itself, but there's a certain level of deconditioning that's going to take place if you, mm-hmm. from a whole body standpoint over those 2 weeks, much less. Just because you take 2 weeks off doesn't mean that those tissues heal and you're just back to 100% right away and you could just jump right back into it. If that was the case, then rehab wouldn't exist and we'd all be like Wolverine, like just insta-heal, right? But that doesn't exist either.
Given enough time, you just end up becoming stronger.
Right. That doesn't happen because the body only gets better if you make it adapt, right? So working through and working through different ideas with the coaches on different conversations that we could start having with the athletes, different types of like either Zoom calls or little seminars that we're doing, just to start to educate, right? Just to prevent as many people from falling through the cracks as possible. Because the next step, whenever they don't get better, and then they start to get more frustrated because now they're at the gym, but they're one of those people that if coach says run, I'm getting on the bike because I'm never going to run again. Yeah. Because it just hurts every time I do it. So therefore I'm just going to stay on the bike or the rower. After a while, a certain period of time is going to pass and they're going to go back to their PCP. The PCP's going to say, oh, well, it hasn't gotten better. Let's refer you to ortho. You're going to go to the ortho and then you're going to want to do an injection or an MRI. Mm-hmm. And then the cost for that person has just quadrupled in how much money they're probably going to spend on this problem. And then after all of those things, then they're going to get referred to PT where they could have just gone in the first place. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. So,
and then you add in the whole like fear of, oh, well, my MRI says that I have degenerative disc. And it's like, bro, you have been dying and you've been degenerative since you were born. So basically.
Yeah, that's it's very true. You know, we're going to age no matter what. I would say it's a little aggressive to say.
But. You know, but that is true. It's usually the people who have the most fear of it are in the older population too, though, yeah. That feel that they can't rebound. And so then 2 weeks where if they might've been patient enough to give you 6 weeks of PT, but then they've already been through this whole process over a 4 or 6 week period, then they're already coming into this with a mental, you know, fatigue that they wouldn't have otherwise had.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. It's tough. So, you know, an interesting thing that I've put more energy into is having those conversations with the coaches that I work with closely, to just be better prepared to communicate those things with the athletes. And to some degree, it's the feedback that I've gotten from them is it's tough because at a certain point, they feel like the person doesn't really listen to them, or it gets to a tipping point where they're like, oh yeah, well, you're saying these things and you're giving me the number of the person that you're saying that can help you, but I'm probably going to go back to my PCP and do an injection just because they want me to. Like, it doesn't, it's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy. So, and I think that's going to take time. I'm not, it doesn't upset me, right? Because, well, it did at first, and then it wasn't a healthy thing to be upset about, because it's like, that's everywhere, right? The same problem that you have in your gym is the same problem that we have here. Mm-hmm. So doing things to be more proactive to try to decrease that happening within the gyms is all you can do. Mm-hmm. You could be funny about it, make memes about it. You could do instructional videos. Like, everybody has their own little different take on it, but it needs to be getting put out there as much as people are getting little tweaks and aches, as well as normalizing those things. So I think that's a good segue to your trainers or your clientele that are harder cases from a medical standpoint.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I have a lot of, I guess you would say older than 40, or in their midlife and beyond, people. I typically am the leeway for most people who come to me for one-on-one or personal training, individually strength training. I'm the leeway for them between maybe they did physical therapy, they felt that they weren't progressing as quickly as they wanted, or they finished their insurance. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, because that is a real reality for a lot of people, is that they only get a set number of visits, or they were post-surgical, like they had, you know, meniscus repair or something, and the progression ends at a certain point. They are now stuck kind of between the clinic and actual return to play scenarios, but a lot of people don't work within those realms.
Yeah.
They're kind of either just team doctors, team, you know, trainers, things like that, or they can't get personal training. And then beyond that, I actually have a lot of people who were finished with cancer treatment. Their regimen is going to look very different just because of when you think about inflammation differently. You're thinking about, for women, for example, a lot of times when it comes to breast cancer treatment, things like that, you know, even if they're not of age to have had menopause or everything like that, like the hormones are going to be different. Mm-hmm. The therapies that they have to go through, their appetite is, that's a huge thing that I work with really regularly. I just see a lot of, and a lot of women struggle because even though they know during treatment that they're going to lose weight and that it's really important to keep as much as they can on, it's kind of been trained into people in a way, and trained into a lot of populations to that any weight loss can be good to a certain degree. And then they're like, you know, oh, well, I weighed this much before treatment, but I also had wanted to lose like 10 pounds. So do I really need to gain back that weight?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, what do you want to do?
Right.
Because at the end of the day, I'm here to like help you. I can give you what I think would be best if you are wanting to be stronger and you are wanting to gain muscle and things, and that's going to be a calorie surplus, but you're going to gain weight. That's part of it.
So question, were most of these ladies that you treat post cancer treatment, had you already trained them before and were they already active before? Or are these like
all of the people that I've worked? Well, actually I can't say all. Most of the people I work with were already active. And so I get trained populations who then were untrained for a significant period of time or went through some medical trauma.
Yeah.
To some degree. And then so I think in a way it helps me because they're already of an athlete mindset.
Yeah.
To a degree. Like they want to push. They want to have those moments where they're challenged beyond what they thought that they could do. Mm-hmm. And they're held to that like higher standard and expectation a little bit. So.
Yeah, that's good. I was going to say, I think that would set you up for, depending on how active they were in the past versus if they were totally untrained before, that would be a totally different initial conversation you would have with someone.
Yeah.
So have you noticed that with those people, you almost have to pull the reins back a little bit?
I have to be very clear on what they expect. Like I have to have that initial, and you know, to a degree, that initial assessment, they might think it's an hour long conversation that we have. It's really a full first month of programming. It's like, hey, you know, have you been eating? Have you been sleeping? What have your stress levels been? How has this quarantine affected you? Like things like that. And it's, but being very clear with them in that initial part to say, if your goal is to get stronger, and I have them write all of this out in their own terms. You know, it's not something where we just converse. It's like, do you want sustainable progress? Or would you like faster progress that's less sustainable? And why? And then they write that out. And, you know, why is it so important for you to be in the gym? If it's not, you don't have to be in the gym a lot of times to train to get the benefit of what most people want. You know, like you can do exercise outside. that's
going to change. So do you curtail the programming to that route?
I will.
Like, do you do a mixture where they'll see you in person and then some of it'll be either at the gym by themselves or at home by themselves?
Yeah, pretty nice. Primarily. And I'm kind of transitioning more, not really just because of quarantine, but I am transitioning more to working primarily remote and online.
Yeah.
One, because I've found that it forces us to be very communicative. It forces us to have those conversations and it literally requires them to record their progress so that, you know, I can say, hey, I want you to hit this percentage of what you did last week with this perceived exertion, you know, or go up to this perceived exertion, and they can very clearly see, oh, you know, like, this was actually significantly easier for me this week than it was a month ago. In the gym, I have found that I require people who have come from like knee replacements or like rotator cuff surgery. Yeah. I do require that I see them in person at least like once a week, whether or not the programming, and just because to me, they're typically of an age where I want to check in with them just generally on other life things, like, because there are so many comorbidities or contraindications to whatever else they have going on. Or I can look at them and know, hey, we're going to back off this week, you know? Like, even sure. If you have an athlete mindset, even if you want to get better, part of getting better sometimes is a huge part of it is that deload, and mm-hmm. and not just physically, but mentally too.
Yeah.
To not strain yourself beyond the point where you're so stressed that your body can't relax.
Sure. That's good. Yeah. The running theme with the conversations I've been having with coaches is it seems to all start and end with communication with the people that you're working with. Depending on if they have goals, right? If they have goals for whatever you're doing mm-hmm. and they're paying you, you got to get to the nuts and bolts of it in order to effectively program as well as load them, as well as know where their headspace is at. And yeah, it sounds like you're doing a good job with that. What would you say, what resources, and this will be like our last closing point. Mm-hmm. What resources have you found that were helpful in giving you that kind of systematized approach?
Mm-hmm.
Or was it just something that you kind of picked up on your own through trial and error?
Trial and error plays a huge role, I think, in everything that coaches do, because we see a problem and we want to figure out what the best solution is going to be for sure. It. I would say I actually have been very grateful. So I've had some really great coaches mentor me.
Yeah.
So I've gotten to see, as far as communication styles, a wide range of communication styles. I think that when it comes to systemizing, whether that's the questions or the assessments, honestly, books like are a go-to. I think that, you know,
reading.
There's Crucial Conversations, that book. Like,
I've heard of that one.
It's literally called Crucial Conversations. I have it somewhere around here, but that one is fantastic because it's basically what you said. If you're not applying stress, you don't know how to respond when that stressor occurs, you know? And so it's practicing those conversations. I sound like an idiot sometimes, I'm sure, because I actually have conversations with myself where I'm practicing how I would answer something. Or I'll stop and athletes will kind of just be like, oh, it's going to take her a minute. She's seeing what she actually wants to say.
That's funny.
Within this. And so Crucial Conversations was good. There have been books recommended to me, and I don't turn down a book recommendation, because I think that if someone has gone out of their way who knows me, I'll say that. I don't turn down book recommendations from people who I align with and who know me, because I've realized that if someone has gone out of their way to share something that they know is going to take time from me, then they believe it's going to be valuable.
Sure.
So I think stoicism type of stuff a lot actually helps me, because it reminds me that no matter how an athlete is doing that day, no matter what they're saying, I think I wrote that too, like, this is heavy, this is hard. They have those conversations with me a lot. I'm in charge of how I act, and I can very often just kind of turn that back to them. And I'm like, you know, you say that this is heavy or this is hard or you're not feeling it today. I'm like, does that really change the work that you have to do? And they're like, no. I'm like, so why then? Like, why are we having this conversation?
Why though?
Yeah. But really, I'm like, so you can keep talking and I'll be here. But at the end of all this, and I've said that before to plenty of athletes, I'm like, you can keep ranting, but at the end of all this, you still have this set. And like, that's not going to change, you know?
That's awesome.
So yeah. Whatever you want to do, you can do it now, or you can do it 3 minutes from now, or you can do it later on today and leave here and come back.
Sure.
Whatever mental space you're in right now, you also have the control over.
Yeah.
So.
That's fantastic. Well, cool. Yeah, this was good. We're going to have like a part two.
Let's do it.
To cover the
corn maze.
To cover the rest of the stuff. Yeah, but this was really good talking points. So yeah, thanks for hopping on.
Yeah, thank you.
This was good. We'll set up a second for sure, and get more into the nuts and bolts of that.
Yeah. Let me know if you guys need anything. Love to help.
For sure.
Thank you all. Thanks so much for this.
Thanks for being on.
Yeah. Have a good one, man.
If you're interested in connecting with us and other coaches around the world, just like you, on a more personal level, join our Facebook group, Alineate Coaches Community, linked in the episode description. Also, if you or a friend who is a trainer are interested in joining us in a podcast, shoot us a message after joining. We'd love to chat.